Even deep into the starlit desert night, it was clear that Obi-Wan had chosen the site of his hermitage as much for its safety as for its beauty. More house than hut, the dwelling had been built on a promontory at the edge of the western dune sea, high enough above the rolling sands to afford a good view of approaching vehicles, and far enough back to avoid being assailed by a constant curtain of blowing grit. The only other approach, the narrow and winding gully up which Herat had guided them, was visible along its entire length from a window bubble near the back of the abode. "I don't see any spare turbo lasers lying around." Han turned the vehicle around so they could leave quickly in an emergency, then raised the access panels. "Where do we start?"
"I don't know."
This wasn't something Leia wanted to admit. She had hoped that as they drew nearer to the hermitage, her feelings would grow clearer. Instead, her sense of needing to be here, her sense of security remained strong, but her idea of why had grown more ambiguous. "I guess we just see what we find."
"Great."
Han drew his blaster and motioned Chewbacca into the blaster turret. "It'll probably be a crate dragon."
"Kenobi's house is too small for crate dragons, but watch out for Anubis,"
C-3PO translated.
"If you don't mind, I'll wait here to help keep watch."
After a quick moonlight reconnaissance of the area, there was little to examine but an old vaporator pad behind the house. Leia and Han returned to find C-3PO keeping watch in the blaster turret. Chewbacca was kneeling in the back, reaching into the cargo area behind the seat, where Herat lay tucked into a corner, clutching something to her chest. They were snarling and squawking furiously, producing a noise that sounded like fighting womp rats. Han opened the rear cargo hatch and plucked Herat out by the scruff of her hood.
"Are you two trying to wake the whole neighborhood?"
Herat jabbered something and tucked a military data pad under her cloak. Chewbacca roared at her.
"3PO," Leia called.
C-3PO continued to study the sky.
"How very interesting. Mistress Leia?"
"3PO, will you stop stargazing and do your job?"
Han nearly had to shout to make himself heard.
"Of course, Captain Solo, but this is..."
"3PO!" Han lifted Herat higher. "What's Herat saying?"
"That she found the data pad and it belongs to her."
C-3PO looked back into the sky.
"You really should look..."
"Later, 3PO," Leia said. "We'll tell you when we want to know." Chewbacca rumbled that he only wanted to see the pad because he saw a picture of Han on it. Of course, the Jawa understood none of this, which Leia knew was the problem.
"Herat," she said, "we'll make you a deal."
This instantly calmed the Jawa. "Let me see the data pad for a few minutes, and you can keep it."
"She would like to know how much rent you will pay."
"How much will you pay me not to drop you?" Han asked.
Herat pulled the data pad from beneath her cloak and passed it over. Leia quickly found a message titled, "Commander's Directive TS-3519, regarding suspected rebels." In quick succession, the display showed file images of Han, Leia, and Chewbacca. A communications officer's voice identified them by name.
"Chimera Intelligence has reason to believe said rebels are the ones seeking Killik Twilight. Command directs they be captured alive. Any trooper slaying one will cost his platoon a week's liberty and 1 month's wages. Fines are cumulative, should more than one be killed."
"They certainly know who we are," Leia said. "That's bad."
"Yeah, but they're not supposed to kill us," Han said. "That's good."
The directive continued.
"Command further directs that if they cannot be captured alive, they be slain regardless of the aforementioned consequences."
A new image appeared on the datapad. This one of a stock YT-1300 freighter, similar to the Falcon.
"Chimera Intelligence believes they are traveling on the Millennium Falcon, a Corellian Engineering Corporation stock-like freighter similar to this. possibly traveling under Regina Gallus, Sweet Surprise, Longshot, Sunlight Franchise, or another false transponder code. Said ship is believed to be somewhere in the area of Mos Espa. Any trooper reporting the location of the ship to Chimera Intelligence will be promoted 2 ranks and have all previous fines and punishments cancelled.
That's bad, Han said. If someone tells them about that smuggler's cave, we're in big trouble.
Mistress Leia, would you like to know now?
No? Leia had almost forgotten the droid had something to tell them. Yes, now would be good. C-3PO pointed along the edge of the dune sea, his finger indicating a group of stars just above the horizon.
I believe there may be a flight of TIEs over there.
TIEs? Han dropped Herat roughly in the speeder and grabbed the electrobinoculars. Where? With the electrobinoculars' reduced field of vision, it took Han longer to find the circle of moving stars than it did Leia. There were 6 of them, winking in and out in a steady pattern as they wheeled out over the dunes and then back over the rugged crags of the Juneland wastes. Without lowering the electrobinoculars, Han asked, Herat, would that ghost oasis be over there?
She wants to know why she should tell you anything, you cheater. That is strictly translation, of course. She says her leg is throbbing.
Chewbacca snatched Herat out of the hover scout and held her over his head. Leia thought he was probably only trying to help her see the TIEs. Really? That's what I thought. Han turned to Leia. We'd have come in right under them. Good thing I trusted that feeling you had. Good thing, Leia said. Toward morning, they were still thinking. Thinking that the situation just kept growing more hopeless. 5 minutes after Leia and the others had sat down to think the night before, a pair of assault shuttles had landed near the oasis and debarked 2 companies of stormtroopers, one into the Juneland wastes and one into the dune sea. An hour later, there had been a few blaster flashes, not enough for a real battle, and the TIEs and the shuttles had departed together. Han was betting that stormtroopers were taking hidden positions around the ghost oasis, surrounding the Tuskens and waiting for the Solos to arrive. Leia was betting that he was right. She was sitting at the edge of the bluff with Han, her shoulder throbbing dully, but feeling good enough that she insisted on taking her turn with the electrobinoculars. If there were any TIEs above the oasis now, they were too high to see, even at a magnification of several 100 times. She lowered the electrobinoculars long enough to activate the journal, then returned to her vigil and asked for the next entry. Leia and Han had spent much of the night listening to her grandmother ponder Anakin's destiny and recount her hard but happy life on the moisture farm, and Leia knew the narrative would occupy just enough of her attention to keep the rest of her mind focused on the oasis. Shmi reported that they were hearing banthas out on the plain. Leia's heart grew increasingly heavy as the following entries grew more concerned with the presence of Tusken raiders, reporting tracks and probes of the security perimeter. Kleeg's moods turned dark, and Owen actually began to seem apprehensive. Shmi confessed to being worried for the safety of young Baru, who was staying with them for a few days.
22, 45, 25.
Today, there are more Tuskens out on the plain. We can't see them, but the lowing of their banthas carries for kilometers. Owen and Klee keep saying we'll be all right, as long as we don't go out at night. I'd feel better if they didn't make such a point of keeping their blasters within reach, even inside. But there isn't much food out here for banthas. The Tuskens will have to move on soon. And Kleeg is going to the Door Farm tomorrow to start organizing local farmers. We'll be fine, Anakin, I'm sure.
Leia continued to watch the stars gleam above the oasis, searching for efflux trails or anything else that might indicate an Imperial movement, and asked for the next entry. No sound came from the diary. Suspecting another data skip, Leia said,
advanced the next entry. When the diary continued to remain silent, Leia glanced down to find a message on the display. End data. Leia shut off the journal and forced herself to return to her duties, though she had to keep blinking tears away so she could see through the electrobinoculars. How the diary had come to be where Anya Darklighter found it, she could not even guess. There were 1,000 possibilities. The one she favored was that Shmi had been carrying it in a pocket when the Tuskens came, and had tossed it there, hoping Klieg or Owen would find it and one day give it to her son. What Leia did know was that the journal had never made it into Anakin's hands, or it would not have been found beneath the vaporator. She wondered whether it would have made a difference in her father's life, had it been given to him, and whether it had remained there all those years to make a difference in hers. Leia found herself staring out across the desert without realizing she had turned away from the ghost oasis. Though the rolling sands were still swathed in night shadow, the moons were already dropping behind the horizon, Tatooine kindling a golden gleam along the crest of the highest dunes. The sight filled Leia with a sense of loneliness and grief that was almost more than she could bear, and she finally understood the source of her powerful feelings. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Leia could almost feel him behind her, brooding over his failure, as the first sun's light crept across the sands. How terrible the burden must have been, how deep his sorrow, that she could still feel it 9 years after his departure. Sitting there where Obi-Wan had stood every morning, she could feel how he had allowed his doubts to rule his life. For years, Obi-Wan had thought of little else but his fallen student, had allowed his concerns to cloud his thoughts, just as Leia had been allowing her own anger and hatred to dominate her view of her father. Could that be what Leia's vision was telling her? That she needed to forgive her father for her own sake? That if she allowed her anger at him to rule her life, she would be harming no one but herself and Han. So absorbed was Leia that she did not hear Han's hurried steps crunching the gravel behind her until he was within 12 steps. Knowing what a stickler he was about keeping proper watches, she brought the electrobinoculars up and swung her gaze back toward the oasis.
"Who do you think you're fooling?" Han demanded.
"Sorry." Leia was so excited that her voice sounded anything but apologetic. "Han, I think I have it. What we came here for."
"Can you tell me about it later?"
Han motioned Leia to her feet.
"'Cause we gotta leave, and quick."
Leia was up instantly, though her stomach was sinking. "Imperials?"
"Worse."
Han displayed a small transistor with a long wire antenna, the kind used in tracking devices.
"Squibs."
"Those vermin have been following us?" Han nodded.
"The sandcrawler is coming up the canyon."
"You're sure it's them?"
"Herat seems to think so," Han said. "We may have to leave her behind, if Chewie can't catch a Jawa with a broken leg."
Leia stopped so abruptly that Han ran into her and knocked the electrobinoculars out of her hand. "That's it."
"What?"
Han grabbed the electrobinoculars off the ground, then took Leia by the arm.
"The hover scout's in the rocks, remember?"
"We don't need it." Leia pulled free of his arm and started down the gully at a run. "Not yet."
"Hey!" Han called, racing after her. "Where are you going?"
"To strike a bargain," Leia called over her shoulder. By the time the sandcrawler's blocky shape could no longer be seen rocking over the crests of the rolling sands, Tatooine was spreading its golden light across the entire vastness of the western dune sea. Leia glanced back at Han, who lay atop the hover scout's forward cargo compartment, scanning the sky with the electrobinoculars.
"It's gone," she reported.
Along with Chewbacca, C-3PO, and the squibs, she was about 10 kilometers from Obi-Wan's, waiting in the mouth of a shadowy canyon at the edge of the dune sea.
"Anything?" "Still just the one tie trailing it."
Han lowered the electrobinoculars and slipped off the speeder.
"Looks like your plan's a go."
"If Herat keeps her word,"
C-3PO pointed out. He was in the front passenger seat.
"Personally, I never find it advisable to trust a Jawa."
Chewbacca, sitting behind the steering yoke, gave a testy grunt.
That has nothing to do with it. I didn't believe for a moment Mistress Leia would include me in the deal.
Pretty cocky for a droid, Han said. He turned to Leia. But 3PO has a point. Herat's taking a big risk. Maybe she'll decide it's too big.
Then she'll do her part,
Sly said, immediately switching back to the question about Herat.
That's why we told you to promise her a diagnostics kit from the Falcon instead of your protocol droid. A Quaxcon Mark 15 is too valuable for a Jawa to pass up.
Tinny's static emerged from the speaker of the helmet in Grease's lap. He flipped a switch under the chin padding, then nodded and turned to Sly.
The droid was right.
Grease passed the helmet forward to Chewbacca.
They switched modulation. It's secure blue.
Of course,
C-3PO said.
The Imperial datapad assured me that changing modes is standard procedure when communications equipment is captured.
Sly made the frequency change in the helmet he was working on and passed it forward as well. To Han, he said,
we're placing a lot of trust in you.
Then why risk her life? Han gestured at Amala, who stood beside Leia in a buff-colored sand cloak. We don't need company that bad.
I'm coming to help you find the Ghost Oasis,
Amala said.
We're only thinking of the objective.
Though Leia knew the Squibs were more interested in protecting their own interests than assuring the outcome of the mission, she didn't even try to argue. Aside from Herat's insistence that simply recovering her sandcrawler wasn't enough compensation for the risk she was taking, this had been the largest sticking point in the hurried negotiations. The Squibs simply refused to go along with the plan unless one of them accompanied Leia and Han to the Ghost Oasis, and no matter that it might compromise the pair's disguises. Leia took her helmet, then glanced down at Amala. I just hope you can hold up, she said. Without temperature-controlled armor, it's going to be a long, hot walk.
That's why she's going,
Grease said.
She's the tough one.
Amala's ears perked with pride. Han rolled his eyes, then took his helmet and clasped Chewbacca on the forearm. Don't hit anything. And when you get the Falcon, don't scratch the... Chewbacca cast his eyes at the sky and rowled in mock annoyance. Han, that ship still has scorch marks from fighting the first Death Star. Leia turned to Chewbacca and said, scratch all you want. Maybe he'll finally paint the blasted thing. Chewbacca nodded enthusiastically and activated the scout speeder's repulsor engines, then started up the canyon with C-3PO and the two male Squibs, casually waving over his shoulder. It was, Leia knew, the Wookiee way of parting under such circumstances. To make a fuss would be to suggest he didn't think they'd be seeing each other again. Leia and Han put on their helmets and started toward the oasis, Amala trailing half a kilometer back to serve as a rear guard, and to stay out of sight, in the event they ran into an unexpected reconnaissance team. They were careful to remain in the shade along the base of the cliffs, both to stay out of the sun and to reduce their chances of being seen by far-flung sentries, Imperial or Tusken. It took them 4 hours of wading through sand and scrambling over rocks to cover the next 4 kilometers, and by the time they finally ducked into a cranny in a small side canyon to wait, Leia was both exhausted and sore. Still, she counted her blessings. Kitster Benai was certainly worse off by far, if he was alive at all. And if they failed to recover Killik Twilight in time to contact Mon Mothma, hundreds of Askagian resistance fighters were certain to endure torments far more painful at the probe tips of Imperial interrogator droids. Amala crept up a few minutes later, her movements so stealthy and her sand cloak such perfect camouflage that she was almost past before Leia noticed and stepped out of hiding to wave her over. How are you feeling, Amala? Leia asked.
I've made it this far, haven't I?
Amala took a long draw from the water tube hanging over her shoulder, then stood and brought her blaster rifle to port arms.
I've got your backs.
Leia and Han crept down the gulch until they had a clear view of the sky over the dune sea. Then Han raised the electro binoculars and knelt down to watch. A minute passed. Two. Leia began to wonder if Herat had decided not to take the risk after all. Then Han finally said,
"They're buying it."
He passed the electrobinoculars over, and Leia saw a dozen TIEs, a full squadron, dropping down over the Dune Sea. She activated the rangefinder, but saw only a one followed by two blurs of changing numbers.
100 kilometers? That can't be right.
Closer to 150, I think, Han said. Herat must have the Sandcrawler's power core running close to critical.
She wants that Mark 15. She deserves it.
Leia passed the electrobinoculars back, then clicked the captured comlink. Chewbacca did not answer, for they were trying to communicate as little as possible to avoid drawing attention. But Leia knew he would be piloting the air skimmer down the last few hundred meters of canyon and out into the Great Mesa, racing for the Falcon's hiding place. Assuming the diversion kept the Imperial eyes focused on the Dune Sea, long enough for him to melt into the general traffic patterns running between Mos Espa and Mos Eisley. They had guessed this part of the trip would take about an hour. The entire return journey, assuming the Falcon was still in the smuggler's cave when he reached it, would take about 3 minutes. A series of blue hyphens flashed in the distant sky.
"They're firing,"
Han reported.
"They're warning shots."
Leia was recalling the command directive they had seen.
"Chimera Command wants us alive."
They put away the electrobinoculars and started toward the oasis again, Leia and Han alternating 50-meter advances with Imala so they could cover each other and watch for Imperials. After 200 meters, they began to hear the rumble of lowing Banthas and retreated into the Dune land wastes. They found the first pair of stormtroopers 30 meters up the gulch, sprawled against the slope, with their weapons at their sides and blood smeared over their armor. One had a single slug thrower hole in the lens of his helmet. The other had been shot in the throat, in the vulnerable area between his breastplate and his chin.
"Looks like we picked the wrong disguises."
Filtered through his helmet vocabulator, Han's voice sounded like the voice of every stormtrooper Leia had ever heard. Holding his blaster rifle ready to fire, Han raced across the killing zone and ducked between two boulders on the other side. Leia followed and joined him, then turned to see Imala rubbing her muzzle against the helmets of the dead troopers. When she had finished, she strapped their equipment belts over her shoulders, bandolier style, and joined the solos between the boulders. Noticing their attention, she said,
"I had to be sure they were dead, didn't I? They might have been laying a trap for you."
Han shook his helmet and started to ascend the hillside, but stopped when the thunder of a set of huge repulsor lift engines echoed off the canyon walls. Leia pulled him back down behind the boulders, then looked toward the sound and saw a curtain of dust boiling down the gulch. A moment later, the armored form of an Imperial assault shuttle rounded the bend, flying past only meters above their heads before disappearing through the canyon mouth.
"That's more like it," Leia said. "They're buying it."
"Maybe,"
Han said.
"Or maybe that shuttle's just running off to pick up a..."
Han was interrupted by a voice in their helmet receivers.
"Company A, report to your shuttle for transport. Company B, redeploy and maintain the ambush."
"Maintain? Alone?"
came an angry voice.
"I've already lost half my company to those..."
A deeper voice came over the comm channel.
"Are you actually questioning your orders, Captain?"
The captain's voice grew instantly obsequious.
"Oh, no, sir. Just asking for clarification." "Very good, Captain. All units return to priority yellow comm silence."
Leia turned to Han.
"Why do you ever doubt me?"
"Slow learner, I guess."
Leaving Imala to hide amid the boulders for now, Leia and Han angled up the dusty slope to within a few paces of the crest, then crept over to an outcropping of tilted slabstone, where they could cross the ridge without presenting an obvious silhouette. Han dropped to all fours and crawled into a long V-shaped trough that would shield them from most sides. Leia covered him until the trough descended a level and he turned to wave her forward. Pushing her blaster rifle along in front of her, she started forward.
then saw the rag-swaddled figure of a Tuscan raider rise behind him, gaffy stick poised to strike. Leia stopped and snatched for her blaster rifle, and that was when a shadow fell across the slabstone beside her. Han brought his blaster rifle up to fire, but the Tuscan behind them was already swinging his gaffy stick.
Han! Behind!
The Tuscan's chest exploded outward in a gout of smoke and light. Then a blaster bolt flashed over Han's head and struck something behind Leia. A strangled gasp sounded above and behind her. Then the shadow disappeared. She turned to look. A third shot lit the air and struck something behind her on the other side. This time, she did not turn to look. She stood up and ran, leaping over Han's head into the far end of the trough. When no gaffy stick smashed her helmet on the way down, she scrambled to her feet and stuck her head over the edge of the trough, blaster rifle cradled and ready to fire. The only targets were the three Tuscans, sprawled over the slabstone with smoking holes in their chests. Two motionless and obviously dead, one reaching for his gaffy stick and muttering something guttural. Han reached over Leia's shoulder and shot him. A stormtrooper, armed with what appeared to be a 2-meter stick, a sharpshooter's long blaster, stepped out of a cranny and waved. Han waved back, and a second trooper, this one with the orange shoulder pauldron of a squad leader, motioned them over. The squib was nowhere to be seen.
Sharpshooter, Leia said anyway. Watch yourself.
Don't think you'll be rid of me that easy,
a nearby rock said.
I know what you're doing.
Knowing there was no point in arguing, Leia turned without speaking and followed Han toward the squad leader.
What's the plan? Leia asked. Get close and shoot him?
If we have to, Han said. But let's try something else first. You still have that data pad from the hover scout?
Leia turned her back to Han so he could retrieve it from her pack. Then they ascended the slope, passing two more stormtrooper bodies on the way, and joined the squad leader in a small stone breastwork concealed in a nook between two sandrock outcroppings. The leader eyed Leia up and down, no doubt contemplating her ill-fitting armor and small size, then demanded,
Service numbers. He's doing a tactical efficiency study,
Han said, jerking a thumb at Leia.
I'm his combat escort.
The squad leader continued to look at Leia.
The training staff doesn't have service numbers? I'm command, not training.
After a moment, the squad leader turned to Han.
What about you? Don't answer that, trooper.
Leia took the data pad from Han and passed him her blaster rifle.
He's on loan to command, you understand.
The squad leader, who clearly did not understand, continued to look at Han. Han shrugged and spread his hands. The squad leader turned back to Leia.
Pushy for such a young fella, aren't you? Your devotion to procedure is to be commended,
Leia said, ignoring the comment.
I'll make a note of it. What's your service number? ST-347.
The number came from the trooper's mouth almost by reflex.
Sir.
Thank you.
Leia made a show of entering it on the datapad.
We were with Company A until the redeployment. We'll be working with you now. We need a blind overlooking the camp, as close to the action as possible.
Sir?
Alone, Leia said. My observations are classified.
ST-347 led them to the crest of the ridge, where he dropped to his belly and crawled forward until they could see the camp ahead. To Leia's surprise, it lay a considerable distance out in the sands, a smear of rocky ground along the base of the first massive dune. She could make out the woolly forms of wandering banthas and the smaller domes of the Tuscan huts, but that was about all with her naked eye.
The closest we can get you is the top of that dune,
ST-347 said. Then he looked down the slope behind them, ordered a pair of passing stormtroopers to wait, and turned back to Leia.
You can tag along with 789 and 636, sir. They'll get you there in one piece.
Very efficient of you, ST-347.
As Leia started down the slope to join her new escorts, she heard ST-347 ask Han,
Who is that kid? One of Pelion's nephews? Worse, Han replied. Quentin's son. Straight out of the academy. Tough break, trooper,
ST-347 said.
Good luck keeping him alive.
40 painful and exhausting minutes later, Leia and Han were crawling the last few meters to the dune's crest. The suns were beating down mercilessly on the sands, and even with her cooling unit turned to maximum, Leia felt as though she was squirming across a frying pan. They reached the top and found themselves looking down the dune's steep side. 200 meters below, 30 Bantha wool huts stood amidst the rocks at one end of a small oasis. At the end opposite the camp stood a permanent hut, still covered in Bantha wool, but supported by an exterior framework of Bantha bones. Next to it, just behind a Bantha rib arch, lay a pile of what appeared to be bleached sticks, though Leia had a feeling they were something else. Leia took out the electro-binoculars and turned them on the hut standing alone at the end of the pond.
Look at the hut next to the bone pile, Han said.
Good idea,
Leia said dryly.
It's a holding cell.
Even without the drawbar she had observed through the electro-binoculars, Leia would have known what she was seeing. Simply looking at the hut sent a shiver down her spine. It was a place of torture and death. A place where suffering and despair had permeated the forest to such a degree that Leia could feel it even atop of the dune. Her stomach grew cold and hollow. A moment later, she began to experience a time-muted sense of loneliness and despair from the direction of the hut, and the electro-binoculars slipped from her grasp. She watched absently as they slid 20 meters down the dune, then vanished beneath a small landslide.
Leia!
Han gasped. He peered in both directions along the crest of the dune, then asked,
What's wrong? I think the captain saw you drop those.
This is where they kept her, Leia said, still in shock. This is where Shmi Skywalker was tortured.
Chewbacca and the Squibs had taken a few scenic detours on the way to Mos Espa, first sweeping around the backside of the Mospic High Range to avoid a company of scout speeders fanning out across the flat south of Mos Espa, then ducking through Arch Canyon to lose a flight of ties they had picked up entering Zelric Draw. Now C-3PO, who had been using a pair of electro-binoculars to reconnoiter the entire trip, was reporting what seemed to be the ultimate roadblock. An Imperial AT-AT walker, moving into position to block the mouth of the smuggler's cave where the Falcon sat hidden in the darkness. Chewbacca opened the throttles wide.
You must have misunderstood me. I said the Imperial walker was in front of us. You will care. There were two scout speeders in position already.
Chewbacca turned to order one of the squibs into the blaster turret, and found them both climbing onto the firing seat, Grease slipping behind the triggers, and Sly arranging grenades and thermal detonators in the stormtrooper utility belts slung across his chest. Chewie grunted happily.
This is not going to be fun. We're going to be blasted to... Oh!
The droid's complaint ended in a wail as the air skimmer reached the dead end and dropped over a 5-meter escarpment. Grease chortled in delight and cut loose with a blaster cannon. Chewbacca got his bearings and saw the walker standing in the cavern mouth, its immense legs braced for firing, its cockpit swinging in their direction, and two platoons of stormtroopers rappelling to the ground on drop lines. Flanked by the two scout speeders C-3PO had mentioned, the walker was effectively blocking the entire cave entrance. Both scout speeders and the walker's cockpit opened up with their blaster cannons, raising a wall of laser blossoms that left Chewbacca piloting from memory. Chewbacca saw the white tree of an AT-AT leg looming in front of him. He swerved to avoid it, bounced over a pile of groaning stormtroopers, and suddenly there was nothing but dark cave ahead. He decelerated and took a sweeping left, then heard the rapid-fire crackles of three thermal detonators and a couple of incendiary grenades going off under the AT-AT. Chewbacca took a gradual left, where they found the underside of the Falcon illuminated by the glow of two portable lamps. In the dim light, a squad of stormtroopers was still struggling to set their E-Web repeating blaster on its tripod. Grease brought the blaster turret around and relieved them of necessity. After a few security shots to make sure there were no survivors lurking about, they swung around behind the Falcon and parked behind the main cargo lift. Leia continued to look at the hut with the drawbar. She had not taken her eyes off of it since dropping the electrobinoculars. The sensation of pain and despair had faded back to nothingness, but the memory of it weighed more heavily on her mind than ever. This was where her grandmother had been held captive and tortured, probably where she had died. And it was where Anakin had found his mother. It had to be. I wonder if she was still alive. Realizing that so far she had not voiced any of her thoughts to Han, Leia added, "This is where Anakin found my grandmother."
"How can you know that?"
Han glanced longingly down the slope toward the lost electrobinoculars.
"Did he leave a sign?"
"Think about it."
Leia explained what Beru's sister had told her about Shmi's abduction from the Lars farm, and how Anakin had returned to Tatooine and recovered her body.
"He found her at this encampment, in that hut."
"So Anakin is the angry ghost?"
Han asked. Leia recalled what Herat had told them about how this place came by its name.
"I suppose so. An entire tribe hacked to pieces."
"They sure picked the wrong woman to kidnap."
Han's gaze wandered to the edge of the oasis, where the Banthas were gathering around a gently rumbling female.
"The mother of a Jedi. Didn't they?"
Leia felt no satisfaction in knowing how savagely her grandmother's death had been avenged. Quite the opposite.
"This is where it happened," she said. "Where he first surrendered to his anger."
"He?"
Han's helmet turned to look at her.
"Your father?"
The electronic voice of a stormtrooper sounded from the slope behind them.
"Excuse me."
Leia and Han spun toward each other and knocked helmets, then turned to find a stormtrooper standing on the slope below, his head cocked as though he could not quite believe the incompetence he was seeing. He held his blaster rifle in one hand, a pair of electrobinoculars in the other.
"Service number,"
Leia demanded, assuming the offensive in an effort to keep the stormtrooper off balance.
"What are you doing sneaking up on us?"
ST-297,
the trooper replied.
"I apologize if I was intruding on a classified conversation."
Noting the different prefix and ST-297's more confident demeanor, Leia assumed a more civil tone.
"You're excused. What do you want?"
"I couldn't help noticing that you had dropped your electrobinoculars."
ST-297 raised the set in his hand.
"I thought you might like to borrow mine." "That's very efficient of you."
Leia nodded Han down the slope.
"I'll make a note of it."
"Thank you.
I'm a great admirer of Commander Quentin."
ST-297, Leia was guessing officer, passed the electrobinoculars to Han, but he kept his helmet lenses trained on Leia.
"Is there anything else you need?"
"That will be all, Lieutenant,"
Leia said.
"I'll make certain that my father, Commander Quentin, hears of your efficiency."
ST-297 seemed to grow an inch taller.
"Very well, then. I'll leave you to your observations."
Leia watched him go, then took the electrobinoculars from Han.
"With sycophants like that leading their platoons, the Empire is doomed."
"Good. We need all the help we can get."
Leia took the electrobinoculars and turned them back on the hut. Now that she was over the shock of what she had felt through the Force, she could see that the Bantha rib arch was splattered with something dark. A pair of rawhide thongs dangled from the bones at just about the height of a human's outstretched arms, leaving little doubt as to the gruesome purpose of the arch. 3 meters behind it lay a pile of sun-bleached skulls and bones. Leia could not bear to look longer. as horrified as she was by what Shmi had suffered, as much as it pained her to contemplate what had happened there, she was even more appalled by the ghastly cycle her father had set in motion. There had to be 100 skulls in that pile, maybe 200 or 300.
He should have known better.
Leia passed the electrobinoculars to Han.
He was a Jedi.
He was a kid with a dead mother.
Han raised the electrobinoculars, but he seemed to be looking more toward the banthas and the bones.
What he did wasn't evil. It was human. Later, he became Darth Vader, and he did a lot of terrible things. But don't forget that he's the one who killed the Emperor.
You're saying you forgive him?
Leia asked.
After he froze you in carbonite?
I'm just saying that without him, Palpatine would still be Emperor.
You're saying Darth Vader saved the galaxy?
Han shrugged.
Well, Anakin Skywalker. Think about it. If he'd have been a nice guy, do you think he'd have ever gotten that close to Palpatine?
Han continued to watch the banthas through the electrobinoculars.
Maybe that was your father's destiny all along. To save the galaxy just like his mother thought he would. Well, maybe not just like she thought, but he did save it.
Han.
Leia felt like her world had been turned upside down. Again. Han had a way of doing that to her.
Han, sometimes you amaze me.
That got him to put the electrobinoculars down.
Just sometimes?
He passed them over.
But our job's not done. Take a look behind the banthas and tell me what you see.
Leia adjusted the focus and saw a small, buff-colored mass creeping across the ground, about 10 meters behind the last bantha.
What is that? A womp rat?
Yeah, a womp rat named Amala.
Han took the electrobinoculars and began to unscrew the recharge port.
But forget about her. I think we've got other problems. Take a look over my shoulder.
Leia saw a long line of stormtroopers starting to creep across the face of the dune toward them.
Behind me, too?
She asked. Han nodded, then pulled a small transistor out of the recharge port. Leia did not need to ask what the two little wires dangling from the end were. She had seen eavesdropping bugs often enough to recognize an antenna.
That lieutenant was a little smarter than we thought.
Han tossed the bug over the edge of the dune, then asked,
What do you want to do? Surrender or try to blast our way out?
I have a better plan. Follow me.
Leia tucked her blaster rifle under one arm and plucked the handheld comlink from her utility belt, then jumped over the side and began to slide down the steep face of the dune.
Chewie, we need a lift, and fast.
Han didn't even know when the Tuskens opened fire. He was about halfway down the dune, lying on his back, sliding down the steep slope with his legs held high, trying to keep Leia in sight between his feet, listening to the almost subliminal rumble of avalanching sand. A sheet of blaster fire erupted from not too many meters up the slope behind Han, flashing down over his head, shredding desert brush Tusken huts, lacing the oasis with strands of smoke and light. The banthas bugled and began to cluster together in a defensive circle, and that was the end of the Sand People's camp. Leia felt her feet catch and flipped head over heels, and her blaster went flying. Han caught it in one hand, then watched in frightened panic as she continued to accelerate, descending the dune's face in a crazy tumble not even a Tusken could hit. Not wanting to be left behind, Han cradled both blaster rifles to his chest, tucked his chin, and planted his feet. At the speed he was traveling already, it was like being launched from a missile tube. Han was dimly aware of several voices inside his helmet, demanding to know what was happening. The lieutenant shouting, Have they been hit? And someone else demanding, Why are you breaking comm silence? Just before he crashed through a thicket of bushes and slammed into a boulder.
ST-297, what's happening down there?
A voice demanded in his ear.
Report! It's the rebels.
the lieutenant answered. We have them in sight. They're fleeing into the Tuscan encampment.
What?
A different voice this time. The same one that had chastised Company A's captain for questioning orders.
Repeat. They're fleeing into the Tuscan camp, sir. We're pursuing, but manpower is limited.
Pursuing, Lieutenant? Set blasters to stun and stop them.
Head still spinning from the blow to his helmet, Han staggered to his feet and followed Leia into the oasis proper. It was much larger than it had looked from above, probably 20 meters across and 100 long. They were on the side nearest the dune and the stormtroopers, about halfway down its length. Leia turned and raced for the main hut, laying suppression fire into the Tuscan camp. Han turned his blaster in the opposite direction, shooting toward the dune.
Leia, do you have any idea where we're going?
Han glanced over his shoulder toward the bugling Banthas. It was impossible to see anything through the bushes and the rising cloud of dust, but he suspected the Tuscan encampment was the last place anyone wearing stormtrooper armor would want to be right now. The Tuscans began to catch up about the same time they reached the end of the pond. Han didn't see any sand people, of course. He simply went sprawling when a slug thrower projectile splattered against his backplate. Leia also went down when a slug caught her in the calf armor. They rolled to their backs and fired in the general direction from which the projectiles were coming. A fan of blaster fire erupted behind them, fanning over their heads to mince the sparse brush in which the Tuscans were hiding. Several Tuscans groaned. Sand people did not scream when they died, and the slug throwers fell silent. Han and Leia rolled to their knees and began firing toward the dune. Han dropped two stormtroopers less than 3 meters away and sent a dozen more diving for cover. He leapt to his feet and, continuing to fire toward the Imperials, grabbed Leia by the arm and charged the last dozen meters to the hut.
You get the painting.
He dropped behind the Bantha rib arch and continued to assault the Imperials, who were continuing to fire at the Tuscans, who continued to stick their heads up every so often to take a pot shot at the Solos.
I'll cover.
An anguished croak sounded from inside the hut.
Who's there? What's happening?
Kitster?
Leia went to the door and flipped the bone drawbar.
Kitster Benai, you're still alive?
I think so.
As Leia started to pull the door open, the crack of a slug thrower projectile sounded against her armor, and she was thrown against the outside of the hut wall. Leia rolled around to the dune side of the hut, behind Han. She went to the hut wall and shouted through the fabric.
Kitster, it's Leia Organa Solo. Is the painting in there with you?
The painting? I'm not saying. Get me out of here.
Leia turned to Han.
It's not in there. Of course not. That would be too easy.
Han nodded Leia over to take his place, then pointed into the rocks on the other side of the sacrificial bone pile.
They're trying to flank us.
Leia stood up, fired twice.
Not anymore.
Han went to the side of the hut.
Hey, Kit, what happened to the painting?
Not telling, he said. You leave me.
Good enough.
Han fired his blaster about a meter beyond the voice, cutting a hole through the bantha wool wall.
Chieftain has... in camp.
Thanks.
Han stepped through the hole he had just blasted, and what he found turned his stomach. Kitster Benai lay spread-eagled on the ground, his dark hair now light as sand. His ankles were swollen. His body was covered in burns and bruises, and three of his fingers were snapped at the middle knuckle.
Kitster, how are you doing, buddy?
Han went to the man's side and kneeled beside him.
Sorry it took so long. We'd, sort of given you up for dead.
Me, too.
Kitster's dark eyes were fearful and bewildered.
Who? You?
Han Solo. You'll just have to take my word for it.
Han pulled the laser cutter from his stormtrooper utility belt and sliced the bindings holding Kitster's wrists and ankles.
Here's the deal.
Han hoisted Kitster onto his shoulders. Starved and dehydrated, he weighed little.
We need to recover that painting or destroy it.
which means Leia and I are going into that Tusken camp. You can come with us, or I can dump you on the stormtroopers. The Imperials will probably throw you in prison forever.
With you, Kitster said. Want to see my children?
Han sighed. I was afraid you'd say that.
But don't go!
Kitster paused to gather his strength.
Look up.
Han turned and looked at the ceiling. There, hanging over the place where Kitster's head had been, was Killik Twilight. The stormy sky, the same deep purple as before. The insectoid figures still turning to face the storm, just as Han remembered.
I thought you said...
Lied, Kitster said. Thought you were... Imperial.
Han pulled the comlink off his belt and depressed the microphone key 3 times. The got it signal. An instant later, Leia peered through the makeshift door, still firing into the rocks.
You actually have it? Up there.
Han hooked a thumb at the ceiling.
I'll cover.
He glanced through the opening and found a dozen stormtroopers only 10 meters away, still coming despite a hail of Tusken slugs. The thump of a concussion grenade sounded from the far side of the oasis. The banthas erupted into an orchestra of bugling, and an ominous reverberation began to roll across the desert.
What's that?
Leia asked. Han shrugged.
Imala, maybe?
He put a pair of blaster bolts through a stormtrooper's chest plate, and 2 more sprang up. 5 meters.
Who cares? We're going hand to hand if we don't.
A long burst from Leia's blaster rifle sounded behind Han. He spun around to see Killik Twilight swinging down from the ceiling in a flap of smoking fabric. Leia plucked the painting off the hooks from which it had been hanging, then turned and blasted a new hole through the opposite wall.
Let's go!
Han glanced back to find a pair of stormtroopers rushing for the old hole. He fired at point-blank range, blasting one off his feet backward and sending the other diving for cover. He backed toward the new hole, still firing, and heard the power pack depletion alarm.
Always something.
Han turned and ducked out of the hut, ejecting the power pack as he went, then tossed it back inside and raced after Leia. Behind him, an Imperial voice cried,
Detonator!
Han pulled the new power pack off his utility belt and inserted it into the socket, then dropped to a knee and turned to wait. Han glanced over his shoulder to see Leia dodging behind a boulder. When he looked back, there was a stormtrooper standing in the makeshift doorway. He burned a hole in the fellow's chest, then began to spray the entire hut with blaster fire. Dodging wildly and praying Benai had the strength to hold on, Han raced to catch up with Leia and duck behind an adjacent boulder. He finally had a chance to glance toward the roar coming from the Tusken camp and saw a 3-meter wall of woolen horn sweeping in from the other side of the oasis, bringing with it a billowing wall of dust.
What next?
He swung the barrel of his blaster around the side of the boulder and fired blindly.
Bounty hunters, Sarlacc pits. It's not that bad.
Leia had Killik Twilight's small rectangle resting against her knees and was pulling a grappling line out of her utility belt.
Imala may have saved us if Chewie would just get here. You think?
Han continued to fire blindly, watching as Leia secured the line around her belt and extended the hooks at the throwing end.
I think.
Leia dropped to a knee and took over cover duties, while Han did the same with his own grappling line. Then, afraid his passenger would not be able to hold on while being dragged across the desert by a charging bantha, he brought Kitster's forearms together beneath his own arm and began to lash the wrists together.
Han, no time!
Leia yelled, still firing.
Move!
I can hold my own!
Kitster's assurance was cut short by a flurry of Leia's blaster bolts burning past Han's tree. Han glanced in her direction and saw a pair of stormtroopers charging up behind her.
Duck!
He yelled, grabbing his blaster rifle. Leia rolled instead, snatching Killik Twilight on the way. Han poured blaster bolts into the stormtroopers behind her, then took off running.
He did not know how closely the next pair of stormtroopers were pursuing him, but the ones behind Leia were within 5 meters and closing fast. The stampede was less a headlong rush than it was a well-organized exodus, with the huge Banthas keeping their calves safely sheltered inside the herd, and taking care to trot along no faster than the young ones could manage. Leia appeared at Han's side, hauling him to his feet.
On your feet, flyboy.
She had Killick Twilight looped over her sore shoulder by the hanging wire, and her blaster rifle tucked into its belt holster.
Company's on the way.
Leia turned and led the way toward the Banthas. Han followed, barely managing to keep up. As they drew nearer to the beasts, the ground began to quake, and Han found himself gagging on a musky stench that even the helmet's filter scrubbers could not remove. Kitster leaned down close to Han's audio pickup, shouting over the roar of the Banthas.
If I can't hold on...
Don't worry, Han assured him. I won't come back.
Shifting the painting onto her back, Leia fell in alongside the herd and reached up, grabbing a handful of shaggy wool. She stumbled, and it looked for a moment like she might fall and be trampled, or her Bantha would panic and knock her over. But her feet simply left the ground, then hauled herself awkwardly up, almost slipping when she had to let her weight hang from her sore shoulder. Han fell in alongside the next beast, and struggling to keep pace, reached up and grabbed hold. Han clenched his teeth and concentrated on climbing, pulling himself up as Leia had done. Whether it was the shock of being hit, or Kitster's extra weight, or perhaps he just wasn't as strong as his wife, he was only halfway up when his hands began to tremble and his forearms to cramp. Kitster sensed his trouble and reached up himself. But he was in even worse shape, too weak to hold onto Han with his injured hand, or the Bantha wool with his good one. His grasp came free, and he began to fall backward.
It's okay, Han yelled. Just grab me!
Quiet, Solo.
A small voice yelled from above.
You want to live, Banai? Give me your hand.
Emala?
Han looked up to see the squib dangling head down above him, her feet tied into the wool on the Bantha's back.
How'd you get here?
How do you think? I jumped.
She lashed out and caught Banai's hand in both of hers.
This would have been easier if you'd have grabbed the right Bantha.
Chewbacca did not double-cross us.
Leia pulled a thumb-sized data chip off the back of the Killick Twilight's moisture control regulator and placed it in a small depression she had scooped out in the sand.
Wookiees don't double-cross.
They were crouched atop a bluff in a small circle of boulders, with Tusken projectiles ricocheting off the rock around them and 2 separate squads of Imperials working into flanking positions along adjacent ridges. The Banthas that had carried them into this mess were huddled in a defensive circle at the bottom of the ravine below, where they had stopped their stampede. Leia pointed her blaster into the depression and squeezed the trigger. The bolt melted the chip to slag. She shot it again. Even the slag bubbled away.
That ought to do it.
Leia returned the moisture regulator to Killick Twilight's frame, then handed the painting to Emala.
It needs filling. You know how to do it?
Emala turned the painting right side up and pointed to the little mouth in the top of the frame.
Pour water in there. Stop when I see it.
Leia couldn't bear to watch. She crawled into a small cranny where Han lay between 2 boulders, keeping watch on the Tuskens, or at least their Banthas.
Are you okay?
She asked.
How bad is it?
Not too bad.
He glanced over his shoulder toward Banai, who was patiently explaining to Emala why she could not fill the reservoir straight from a water bottle.
You really want to trust Emala with your Killick Twilight?
I don't want to, but it's the Squib's painting now. A deal's a deal.
A trio of loud pops sounded from somewhere below, and 3 slugs pinged next to her head, showering her helmet with shards of sandrock. Leia studied the ravine and saw only stone, dirt, and glare.
Where are they?
She asked.
You tell me, Han said. If I knew, I'd be shooting back.
Leia watched for a moment longer. When another round of rock shards pattered off her helmet, she began to pour blaster fire into the largest boulder in the gully. A small hand tapped Leia on her calf armor.
Time to go,
Imala yelled.
Your ride's coming.
Han began to inch back out of their cranny.
Ride on schedule.
Leia remained where she was.
If you call this on schedule, I see why you were always in trouble with Jabba.
She stopped aiming and, keeping the trigger down, began to sweep blaster fire back and forth across the gully.
We can't leave!
The rest of her sentence, until we stop those stormtroopers, was silenced by the roar of an incoming concussion missile, and the ravine erupted into an expanding sphere of tumbling stormtrooper parts and bright, blinding light. With an aura of escaped current crackling across her metallic skin and columns of acrid smoke billowing from the perforations in her hull, the Falcon looked more like a used gunnery target than one of the fastest freighters in the galaxy. The landing struts had barely touched ground before a clunk sounded from beneath the ship's belly, and the rear cargo lift lowered the Falcon's utility speeder into view. Grease was nearly hanging from the pilot's handlebars, his short legs dangling down barely far enough to reach the foot controls. Sly stood behind him on the small cargo bed, both hands clutching the back of the pilot's seat.
There's my ride,
Imala said. She was kneeling in the boulders in front of Leia and Han, with Killick Twilight slung over her back.
If you make out of the system alive, maybe we'll partner up again sometime.
Why wait? Han asked. Come with us. When we get back to Coruscant, the New Republic will pay big for the painting, more than anyone else.
I said, if you make it out alive.
Imperial blaster fire began to pour in from the adjacent ridges, ricocheting around the boulder field and bouncing off the Falcon's scorched armor with the hollow squeal of groaning metal.
And the way your ship looks, that's a big if. Sorry, but we'll take our chances with the Imperials.
Your odds aren't so great either, Han pointed out. We're surrounded by stormtroopers, or haven't you noticed?
Our odds will improve once I tell the Imperials we're ready to sell the painting to them.
Imala jumped up on a boulder long enough to wave her arms and yell to Grease, then dropped back into cover, barely half a breath ahead of a dozen screaming bolts. The utility speeder shot out from beneath the Falcon and turned toward the boulder pile, lurching and weaving as blaster fire ricocheted around it.
You're going to sell Killick Twilight to the Empire?
B'nai gasped.
It's their painting.
Leia nodded to Imala.
You have my blessing to do with it as you will.
The Falcon's top turret spun around and began to spray suppression fire across the adjacent ridges, not hitting much, but forcing the stormtroopers to keep their heads down. The enemy assault withered and grew less accurate. Imala eyed Leia with a look of condemnation.
You think I don't know what you're doing? I'm disappointed in you.
Leia shrugged.
We could make it look like you're stealing the painting, she suggested. That might make a session with an interrogator droid a little less likely.
The battered utility speeder rocked to a stop next to their hiding place. Imala studied Leia a moment, then nodded.
Make it look good, and the Empire will never hear about that little data chip you removed.
You're trying to blackmail us after we let you keep the painting?
Han swung his blaster around.
Why, you little...
With eyes growing as round as wheels, and Killick Twilight still slung across her back, Imala leapt onto the nearest boulder and bounced onto the speeder's cargo bed behind Sly. Han managed to burn one bolt into the instrument console as the vehicle fishtailed away.
Han?
Leia pushed his arm down.
Are you trying to kill her?
She said to make it look good.
He raised his blaster again, and as the Imperials continued to pour fire after the utility speeder, took another shot.
I'm just doing like she asked. That's good enough, Han.
Leia kneeled next to Kitster and slipped his arm over her sore shoulder.
Help me with Kitster before our diversion disappears.
Han grabbed Kitster under the other arm
and together they hobbled out of the boulders. As Leia had hoped, the stormtroopers were so focused on the fleeing squibs that they didn't even notice the trio until it had reached the ship. A flurry of blaster bolts ricocheted off the bottom of the Falcon and churned the ground into a dusty froth. Leia turned and 50 meters away saw half a dozen stormtrooper helmets peering over the crest of the hill.
Go!
Half dragging, half carrying Kitster, Leia and Han hurled themselves onto the cargo lift. The cargo lift began to rise, so did the Falcon itself, and an instant later, the blaster bolt stopped ricocheting past the trio. They remained lying on the floor, grasping the non-slip grate, until the lift thunked into place. Leia guided Kitster into an escape pod, then retrieved the Quaxcon diagnostics kit they had promised Herat. You understand the risk you're taking? She passed the kit to him. We can't be certain Herat will retrieve the pod, and you'll be landing a long way from civilization. The Falcon shuddered as Han opened fire on the squibs. Leia had the trust that he was just trying to make it look good. Then Chewbacca brought them around for another pass, and something groaned in the superstructure. Kitster cast a nervous glance at the ceiling. Yes, I'm very sure. I'd like to live to see Tamora and my children again. Leia laughed. We'll hold together, but it's your choice. Thank you, Kitster said. And thank you for coming after me. I doubt the Imperials would have troubled themselves. You might be underestimating them, Leia said. I'm sure their new admiral is as eager as I am to know why you took the painting. Kitster raised his brow. You haven't figured that out? It was for you, Kitster said. Well, for your father, really. But since he's gone, I wanted to do something kind for his daughter. You see, when Anakin and I were children... Stop. Leia raised her hand. That's all you need to say. I know all about the credits he gave you, and a lot of other things he did here, too. Kitster's face grew solemn. Including what happened at the Oasis? Leia raised her brow in surprise. I had a hint from the Force, but how do you know what happened there? The Tuskens had a story dance the night we arrived, Kitster explained. I already knew that Anakin had returned with Shmi's body, so when they dropped into sword stances and started to leap around making buzzing sounds, it was obvious who they were imitating. Kitster fell silent for a moment, studying Leia. Then added, and there's something you should know about what he did there. If you're going to try to justify it, I couldn't possibly, Kitster said. Your father was a Jedi. What he did was wrong. Quite possibly it set him on the dark road he took later in life. And even he was sorry for his mistake. He was? Leia furrowed her brow. How would you know that? He said as much, I think. Kitster buckled his crash webbing, then stared at the floor and continued. When I heard that he had been asking about his mother at Watto's, I went out to the Lars farm to visit him. I didn't know Shmi had been taken, of course, but I happened to arrive shortly after they had buried her and Anakin had left. Baru told me that when they buried Shmi, Anakin spoke to her grave, saying he had not been strong enough to save her, but promised he would not fail again. Fail again? Leia asked. But his mother was already dead. How was he going to undo that? Kitster nodded. That struck me as odd, too, and I asked Baru about it. She told me that he had said twice that he was not strong enough. Once that he was not strong enough to save his mother, and the second time, just that he was not strong enough. I thought at the time that he had just repeated himself, but now... I'm not so sure.